The floor is no longer a floor. It is a series of shallow wooden waves. I wake up every morning and wait for the house to tell me which way it wants to lean. Today it is leaning toward the bay. The tilt is so sharp that my water glass has slid across the nightstand and hit the wall. The glass didn't break. It just sat there against the baseboard. It looked like it was trying to escape the room. I sat up and felt the familiar pull in my lower back. My spine tries to compensate for the angles of this house. My body is learning to live on a slant. I swung my legs out of bed. My feet hit the plywood. The floor felt soft. It shouldn't feel soft. This house is built on a gravel pad that is supposed to be frozen solid. It is supposed to be as hard as granite. But the permafrost is not frost anymore. It is soup. I walked to the kitchen. I had to walk uphill to get to the stove. Every step sounded like a gunshot. The structural beams are snapping under the tension. They are spruce and fir, brought up on a sea lift years ago. They weren't meant to bend like this. I turned on the tap. No water came out. The shifting of the piles must have finally pinched the intake line. This is the third time this month. I walked to the window and looked out at the tundra. The ground is bleeding. That is the only way to describe it. The moss and the lichen are peeling back in great dark strips. Beneath them, the exposed earth is black and wet. It smells like old copper and rotting vegetation from 1,000 years ago. A thermal slump opened up yesterday behind the old co-op building. It looks like a giant took a bite out of the hillside. The earth just gave up. It turned into a slurry and slid toward the water. I am 42 years old. My grandmother lived in a skin tent not far from here. She knew how to move when the seasons changed. She knew that the land was a living thing, but we were told to stop moving. We were told to sit still. They gave us these boxes. They bolted them to the ground. They told us this was progress. Now the ground is reclaiming the gift. I put on my parka and went outside. The air was too warm. It is April in Nunavut. It should be minus 20. It is plus 4. The snow is gray and honeycombed with meltwater. I crawled under the crawl space of the house. I had to slide on my stomach through the mud. The mud is cold, but it is not frozen. It gripped my clothes. It felt like hands pulling at my jacket. I found the main support pile. It is a steel pipe driven deep into the earth, or it was. Now it is hanging in midair. The ground beneath it has subsided by nearly 2 feet. The house is being held up by hope and a few cross braces that are bowing outward. I took a car jack and a block of wood. I tried to pump the jack to level the corner. The wood groaned. The jack sank into the mud. The house didn't move an inch. The earth is too soft to push against. I sat there in the mud. I put my forehead against the cold steel of the pile. I could hear the house above me. It was humming. The wind was catching the angles of the roof and making the whole structure vibrate. My neighbor Silas walked by. He saw my legs sticking out from under the house. He stopped and waited for me to crawl out. He didn't ask if I needed help. He knew there was no help to give. Silas lost his shed last week. It didn't burn down. It didn't blow away. It just tilted until the door wouldn't open, and then the permafrost swallowed the back left corner. He had to chain it to his truck to keep it from sliding into the ravine. The inspector came by, Silas said. He looked at the horizon. He never looks at the houses anymore. It hurts too much to see them failing. And? I asked. I wiped the mud from my face. He called it maintenance, Silas said. He said the structural failure is due to owner neglect of the foundation pad. He said it's not a disaster. It's a civil matter. I felt a heat rise in my chest. It was sharper than the cold mud. Neglect? How do you maintain a foundation when the planet is melting it? Silas shrugged. His shoulders stayed up near his ears. The government says if the house isn't hit by a flood or a fire, it isn't an emergency. They say we have to fix it ourselves, or we can apply for the relocation grant. The grant is for $10,000, I said. A new house costs $600,000 up here. Shipping the materials alone costs more than the grant. I know, Silas said. He walked away. He walked with a limp. His house is tilting the opposite way of mine. His hips are trying to learn a different geometry. I went back inside. The smell hit me as soon as I closed the door. It is the smell of the end. It is black mold. It grows in the corners where the walls have separated from the ceiling. The moisture gets in, the heat stays trapped, and the fungus feeds on the insulation. I have a cough that won't go away. It is a dry hacking sound. I hear it in the middle of the night. My daughter has it too. She is 7. She thinks the house is a ship. She plays a game where she pretends we are sailing to Greenland. She doesn't understand that a ship is supposed to float. This house is a lead weight. I sat at the kitchen table. I took out my laptop. I have sent 42 emails to the housing authority. I have sent photos of the cracks. I have sent videos of the water glass sliding across the table. I opened the latest reply. It was from a man in Ottawa. I looked at his signature. He has 3 titles. None of them involve the Arctic. Dear Miss Akuluk, the email read, we understand your frustration regarding the settling of your unit. However, current federal disaster relief frameworks do not cover slow-onset climate displacement. These funds are reserved for sudden impact events. We suggest contacting your local Hamlet office for information on gravel subsidies. Gravel. They want to give me gravel. They want me to pour stones into a hole that has no bottom. I looked at the map on my screen. The satellite view shows the coast. It is changing every month. The sea ice used to protect the shore. It acted like a buffer against the waves. Now the ice is gone for half the year. The storms hit the raw earth. They eat the cliffs. My aunt's house in Tuktoyaktuk is already gone. They had to tear it down before it fell into the ocean. She lives in a tent now. In the summer, she lives in a shack. She is 70. She spent her life teaching children how to read. Now she is a climate refugee in her own country. I stood up and went to the living room. I looked at the photos on the wall. They were all crooked. I tried to straighten one of my father. He was holding a char. He was smiling. By the time I walked back to the kitchen, the photo had tilted again. I am watching my life lose its alignment. I heard a loud crack. It came from the bathroom. I ran down the hall. The floor felt like it was dropping away beneath me. The toilet had pulled away from the floor. The wax ring had snapped. Water was bubbling up from the pipe. It wasn't clean water. It was gray and smelled of sewage. The shifting house had sheared the waistline. I grabbed towels. I shoved them around the base of the toilet. My hands were soon soaked in filth. I started to cry. It wasn't a loud sob. It was just a leak. Like the house, I was just leaking. I sat on the edge of the bathtub. The tub is plastic. It felt thin. I looked at the sink. The mirror was cracked down the middle because the wall behind it was bowing outward. I thought about the word displacement. The government uses it like a technical term, like a displaced bone or a displaced valve. They don't talk about what it means to be pushed off the only rock you know. They don't talk about the ghost of a foundation. I went to the front door. I opened it and looked across the road. My neighbor across the street is a white man who works for the mining company. His house is on a different kind of pad. It is refrigerated. They have pipes in the ground that keep the permafrost frozen. They are literally freezing the earth so their buildings don't move. The mine can afford to freeze the world. I can't afford a bag of gravel. I saw a truck pull up. It was the housing inspector. He didn't get out right away. He sat in the cab with the heater running. He was looking at a tablet. I walked down my sinking stairs. The bottom step was already buried in the mud. I waited by his door. He rolled down the window. He looked tired. He was young. He had a fleece vest with a government logo on it. Miss Akuluk, he said. The toilet line snapped, I said. The house is uninhabitable. He sighed. He didn't look at my house. He looked at his tablet. I saw the report from the last visit. The ground state hasn't changed enough to trigger an emergency evacuation order. The ground is in my bathroom, I said. The house is breaking in half. I see that, he said. His voice was soft. He actually sounded sorry. That made it worse. But the criteria are very specific. If I declare this uninhabitable due to ground subsidence, the liability falls on the territory. We don't have the units to move you into. If I kick you out, you're homeless. If I leave you here, you have a roof. My hands are tied by the policy. Change the policy, I said. I just take the pictures, Clara, he said. He got out of the truck. He walked around the house. He didn't even use a level. He could see the tilt from the road. He took 3 photos. He didn't go under the crawl space. He didn't want to get his boots muddy. I'll submit the update, he said, but don't expect a different answer. The federal budget for Arctic housing was capped in January. They're focusing on the fires in BC right now. He got back in his truck and drove away. He left tracks in the soft mud that immediately filled with water. I went back inside. My daughter was standing in the kitchen. She was holding her boots. Mom, the water is under the fridge, she said. I looked down. The sewage water had traveled down the slope of the kitchen floor. It was pooling under the refrigerator. The motor was humming, unaware that it was about to short out. I didn't clean it up. I couldn't. I had used all the towels. I walked to the closet and pulled out our suitcases. I started throwing clothes into them. I didn't fold them. I just stuffed them in. Are we going on the ship? She asked. We're going to your aunt's, I said. But she lives in a tent, my daughter said. The tent doesn't sink, I told her. The tent knows how to move. I packed her school books. I packed the photo of my father. I packed a heavy sweater. I looked around the living room. I had spent 10 years paying for this furniture. I had picked out the blue curtains because they matched the summer sky. I had painted the walls a warm cream color to fight the long dark of winter. Now the walls were screaming, the drywall was puckering, the tape was peeling off in long, sticky strips. I realized I wasn't leaving my home. My home had already left me. It had become a trap. It was a box of wood and nails that was slowly being pulled into the belly of the earth. I grabbed the handles of the suitcases. I led my daughter out the door. I didn't lock it. There was no point. The frame was so warped, the bolt wouldn't line up with the hole anyway. We walked to my old truck. I put the bags in the back. I looked back at the house. From the outside, it looked almost normal. If you didn't look at the horizon line, if you didn't see the way the porch stairs were twisted like a broken limb, I started the engine. The truck rattled. I drove down the road, feeling every dip and heave in the asphalt. The road is sinking too. The whole town is a slow-motion shipwreck. I looked at the rearview mirror. I saw my house getting smaller. I wondered how long it would take. Would it be a month? A year? When would the roof finally touch the moss? The government would wait until then. They would wait until the chimney was the only thing sticking out of the mud. Then they would call it a disaster. Then they would offer a handshake and a form to fill out. I reached over and held my daughter's hand. Her skin was warm. We passed the mine. The lights were bright. The refrigeration pipes were humming, keeping their little patch of the world frozen and safe. They were fighting the sun and winning. I drove toward the outskirts of town, where the gravel ends and the tundra begins. I am a woman of the north. My ancestors survived the ice. They survived the wind. They survived the hunger. But they never had to survive the ground turning to water. I pulled over near the trailhead. The sun was low, casting long, distorted shadows across the melting land. I looked at my hands. They were stained with the gray water from my broken home. I didn't have a plan. I had a suitcase and a tank of gas. I looked out at the bay. The ice was dark. It was rotting from the bottom up. I am not a citizen to them. I am a maintenance issue. I am a line item in a budget that has already been spent. I turned off the engine. The silence was heavy. Then I heard it. Far off toward the town, there was a dull, heavy thud. It sounded like a tree falling, but there are no trees here. It was a house. Another one had lost its fight with the gravity of the melt. I sat in the dark and waited for the morning. I waited to see who else would be on the road. We are the displaced. We are the people of the sinking mud. And no one is coming to pull us out.